For security, there's a ton of content out there, and if you don't know where to start, it can be overwhelming, even paralyzing. So let's fix that. Welcome to Simply Cyber, a community of tens of thousands of aspiring and active cybersecurity professionals focused on networking, knowledge sharing, and professional development. I'm Dr. Gerald Osher, Chief Content Creator at Simply Cyber, inviting you to get the answers to your cybersecurity problems with hundreds of cybersecurity videos answering your frequently asked questions, interviewing industry experts, and live streaming daily cyber threat briefings hosted by me. Now get the stories and insights you won't find anywhere else. Hit subscribe now and dig into all the fresh content on the channel and in the community. Nothing should stop you from launching and leveling up your cybersecurity career today.
Good morning, everybody. Coming in like, you know that meme where the car is like taking a right off the highway, like an emergency turn? That's what's coming on you right now. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Simply Cyber's Daily Cyber Threat Brief Podcast. I am Dr. Gerald Osher. Woo! This is March 20th, 2024, episode number 582 of Simply Cyber's Daily Cyber Threat Brief Podcast. And over the next 45 minutes, me, you, Marcus Kyler, the Yeet Crew, Mr. Green Reads, Nerman, Michael Huskin, Alpha Sierra, Paul Savage, Zach Morrison, Jay and Michelle. Zach, hope the interviews went well, bud. Matt McDaniel from Texarkana, which you're going to find out in a hot minute when we go around the world. Folks over on LinkedIn like Logan Fuller, who I know is going to log in here in a hot minute. Folks on YouTube, long-timers, first-timers, all of you. Mods, Rob Cooper, guys, everyone, we're all going to be shredding the top cybersecurity news stories of the day, and I'll be pounding coffee all morning trying to get the jumpstart this body. We're going to be shredding the top cybersecurity news stories of the day, and I'll be giving my expert opinion and analysis on each of those stories on what it means to you as a practitioner. So how can you use this information to drive cyber risk reduction in your business environment for your business stakeholders today? And if you're looking to break into the industry, there's going to be massive value for you here because you're going to be asked in any job interview, just like Haircut Fish is today. Let's go, Haircut Fish. Send some good vibes to my man, Haircut Fish, who's interviewing today. You're going to be asked, how do you stay current in the industry? This is the answer right here. 100% of the time, you will nail that question. Also, the networking's phenomenal. Say what's up. Every time we start this show, I say what's up to a lot of people in the Simply Cyber community. I love it. I love it. I love it. And it's such a great community. Love to connect with all of you. So you too, if you're listening right now and you're thinking, what do you mean connect with these people? Say hi in chat. Welcome these people. There he is. There's Haircut Fish. Giddy up on that one, my man. All right. Now, before we dig into the show, before we go around the world, stay tuned for that segment. I'm super pumped to talk about Barricade Cyber Solutions. Barricade Cyber Solutions is dedicated to helping businesses from cyber attacks and recover from the damage done. Cyber attacks can cause massive issues for business owners and send these dedicated, hardworking business owners into turmoil. But Barricade Cyber Solutions knows how to mitigate the damage done by cyber incidents. Believe that. Check them out at barricadecyber.com. Links in the description below. Also, do you know about Panopsi? Brandon Poole, P-O-O-L-E, Brandon Poole, over at Panopsi. Get a partner who understands your cyber program and your business goals. Guys, I have known Brandon Poole and the Panopsi crew for years. They are excellent senior industry practitioners who can help any business help level up their information security program, whether it's just initializing something like rolling out CIS 18, or coming in for an actual active program and doing staff augmentation. Like, hey, listen, we got a pretty good program here, but we desperately need to do tabletop exercises. Can you help us? The answer is absolutely yes. See how Panopsi can help you. Go to panopsi.com. Links in the description below. Also want to say shout out to Anti-Siphon, but more about these beautiful babies at the mid-roll. If you are currently involved in the Anti-Siphon Getting Started with InfoSec training with John Strand that's happening this week, like you were in class the last 2 days and you're in class today, let me know in chat. I do really love the Anti-Siphon training offerings and their price point. Free! So giddy up in chat. I'd love to see who's in there and what your experiences are like. I want to let you all know that I do not prep or research any of the stories at all. Sometimes I see the headlines as I'm opening the tabs and prepping the show. Today, I really don't even know. Like, I literally have no idea what we're going to be talking about. The coffee hasn't even kicked in. I'm operating. You know how the show, the mobile studio, was operational at 80%? We're in the main studio today, but Jared, like this guy, two thumbs and all smiles, is operating at 80%. I'm hoping this coffee can push me over the edge. Give me a second here. All right. Each episode of the Daily Cyber Threat Brief is worth half a CPE. So all you newly minted certification holders, I know. Oh, my God. I forget. Somebody got the CISSP just yesterday. And it's slipping my mind. But if you have in cybersecurity certifications and you need CPEs, which you definitely do, each episode's worth a half a CPE. So say what's up in chat. Harish Kumar, John Strand is insanely intelligent. All right, guys. Hey, two things. One, if today is your first episode, Marcus Kyler, I'll tell you what. I might buy Crank for April Fool's Day, okay? And not even embellish it. Just see what it does. All right, guys. Hey, if it's your first episode of the Daily Cyber Threat Brief, once upon a time in 1979, good to see you came back. Good to see you came back once upon a time in 1979. Recent newest member to the Simply Cyber community. Guys, each episode, the record just skipped and I almost went backwards like a segment. If today is your first episode, do me a favor, say what's up in chat with a hashtag first timer. Hashtag first timer for all our first timers. We have a special sound effect for you. Yep. CISSP is 5 years of experience. Okay, guys. If it's your first episode, hashtag first timer, we have a special sound effect and a special emote. And once I get my OBS situation set up, you'll have a special animated jiffer. But right now, we got business to do, guys. I'm super excited. It's one of my favorite segments. I can't put the thing up on chat for some reason. But guys, I want to tell you, it's Worldwide Wednesday. We got a first timer. We got some good timers. Monica Nunez, a first timer in chat. We'll take it. Welcome to the party, pal.
Welcome to the party, pal.
All right. All right, guys. Check it out. Worldwide Wednesday. It's where we're at right now. Worldwide Wednesday is presented by IT Pro from ACI Learning, the international online training solution that professionals in audit, cyber, and IT turn to for binge-worthy content. Use my promo code SIMPLYCYBER30 to get 30% off your first month or first year of IT Pro from ACI Learning. Wonderful platform. I've taken training from them. It's really entertaining. It's really educational. It's thorough. So giddy up on that. Right now, what I'd love to do is see if we have international representation. Over 100 countries are members of the Simply Cyber community. So let's do it. Mods, I'm going to set the timer to 2 minutes, 22 seconds. Chat, where are you at? Let's go. Take a slug of coffee first. Here we go. VJ's in India. Boom. Tony Roy is bringing Canada online. Let's go. Plum Hippo is bringing Dirty Jurors on in the entire United States. Power Tree with Hot Atlanta. Zambia. Yes, sir. Zambia's in the house. What's up, Africa? Good to see you. All right. Jax is in her AI class. Very nice. Kennesaw George is in here. Hey, Palm Beach. I see you. Oh, Tom Bishop bringing the boot on. What's up? Hey, Kenya. Yes. Kenya's in the house. Africa representing. Philippines checking in. Thank you, Philippines, from the back row. Jackson, Mississippi. What's up? Live Free or Die coming in. Hot Brian Souse. Flow Rider. Alberta. Sycamore. Thailand. Johnny Five always bringing Asia on. I love it. Indiana. I see you, Nigeria. Nigeria is awesome. We got more Africa contingency. The UK. Pip Pip Cheerio. What's up, Austin, Texas? Miami getting hot in here. India, Mumbai. All right, Brazil. Gabriel Saint Anna bringing on South America. South Florida. Hotlanta's up in here. Japan, Mississippi, making Georgia, Israel. I do know where Israel is now. Israel's in the house. Thank you, Israel. Hopefully everything's well. Moesha White in the middle of a Worldwide Wednesday. Welcome to the party, pal. Zimbabwe. Yeah, Zimbabwe's down here. Look at Africa coming in hot. Texarkana, I see you screaming from the back. Ethiopia. Dude, this is going to become an African show. Love it. Look at this. New York City, Big Apple's in here. Hey, Spain, I see you, Europe. Dirty Jurors, what's up? Hashtag Team SC, Brian White. The Virgin Islands is in here. I love it. Togo. Togo is too small. I mean, it's not too small. It's too small on this map. I can't really grab Togo. But definitely super supportive. Hey, Michigan, is the Great Lake UP first time or Texas? Moesha White. All right, we got Texas in the house. North Dakota's up in here. Tennessee, you're the only 10 I see, Alpha Sierra. Hey, Michael Adams, coming in hot. All right, guys. No Australia? Bro, did I offend? Did I offend the Australians? This is like two or three Wednesdays in a row that the Australians... Yeah, Luke Canfield, I'm getting better at it. All right, guys, it looks like we did not get Australia. We did get Mexico, though. I do want to give a shout-out really quickly to St. Anna bringing South America online. We've always struggled with South America, but that South America has been coming correct. Peru, Chile, Brazil, Colombia on the regular. Olafimi Oyenbu, first-timer on LinkedIn. What's up? Welcome to the party, pal. I love it. All right, guys. Hey, good work, everybody. Oi, oi, oi. We didn't make it. I know I love Bluey, one of the greatest exports coming out of Australia right now. But Vegemite, Bluey, and koala bears. Way to go. We got Asia, Africa crushing it. Europe's online. Brazil is South America. And obviously, North America is just straight up crushing it. Funky Monk, Internal Stranger. Hold on, Funky Monk. Funky Monk, Blue Badge, are you in chat? Funky Monk, aren't you Australia? Can we get We're holding the gate open. This is like an action movie where the gate's coming down and I've thrown some type of trash can underneath it. Hey, broke hacker in real life. I see you, first timer. All right, hey. We're going to drop out of here. I will keep a close eye on chat to see if Funky Monk can confirm. Yes, sir! Funky Monk, doink! We went around the world. Congratulations, everybody. All right. Well done, everybody. International representation coming at you live. Funky Monk, Australia's in the house. Congratulations, everybody. Well done. Worldwide Wednesday is a success. Oh, Togo's a few ticks west of Nigeria? Well, I'll be a monkey's uncle. Look at this. Thank you, Glum Hippo, and thanks for the super chat.
We just become best friends.
Yep. For some reason, I thought Togo was like Trinidad, Tobago, Togo. So Togo, more Africa. I'm telling you, Africa has literally come online. I love it. All right, guys. We got work to do, and I'll tell you what. I was dragging my butt coming in to the episode, but going around the world, that's a game changer. Let's go. All right, guys, do me a favor. Sit back, relax, and let's let the cool sounds of the hot news wash over us in an awesome wave. I can't wait to see you all at the mid-roll.
From the CISO series, it's
we got Lauren Verno today. Lauren Verno, ladies and gentlemen.
These are the cybersecurity headlines for Wednesday, March 20th. 2024. I'm Lauren Verno. Midstream hack postpones esports league. Quote, I'm getting hacked, bro. I'm getting hacked. End quote. Was an esports player's immediate reaction upon realizing he was indeed being hacked during a live stream game over the weekend. In separate incidents during the Apex Legends Global Series tournament, two players unexpectedly gained access to cheats, which is forbidden in these kinds of competitions, prompting organizers to suspend the game. Initially, it was suspected that hackers exploited a remote code execution vulnerability. However, the following day, the developers behind Apex Legends' anti-cheat system Easy Anti-Cheat announced on X that they had ruled out the possibility of an RCE being involved. As of now, there have been no further updates on what transpired.
All right. So, couple things here. One, you know, esports, I don't really like run in esports circles, but I will say that, you know, there is a legitimate industry for esports with big money. This particular tournament had a $5 million.
Great cash, homie.
Thank you, Randy. A $5 million pool, right? So not, this isn't like a Friday night Magic the Gathering at your local card store where the winner gets like a $25 gift certificate to the store itself. This is a $5 million prize pool. These teams do travel. They have sponsors. You know, they train. So, I mean, they're very much like a professional organization. Now, this particular guy, in video games, like as many of you may or may not know, there's the ability to hack the game, right? And basically get access to underlying stuff. Think of Game Genie if you want to date yourself. And for you youngs, back in the day, you actually had to buy physical cartridges and insert them into the consoles. The Game Genie was this amazing tool that you plug the game into and then plug the Game Genie into it. By the way, I researched Game Genies back in the day. And essentially, Game Genie was kind of like, not rewriting, but it was changing bits and bytes in assembly, which is why if you ever put a Game Genie code in, you would be putting in hexadecimal values. So it's kind of a fun little nostalgic thing once you have like you're not a child and you have like computer science knowledge to go look at how a Game Genie actually works. It's actually quite cool and fascinating. But these hacks definitely give an unfair advantage. If you've ever seen you know, people in lobbies, or there's tons of YouTube videos of people hacking, the ability to see through walls to see where other people are, auto aiming or aim snap aiming or something like that. The ability where you don't have to aim, you just kind of shoot and the thing snaps on them. With this level of advantage, it's not even fair. It's not even fun. And when you're talking about $5 million, it's absolutely ridiculous. Now, they said remote code execution, which would be an exploit. There's two things that can go on here. One, the hackers could have done this with the intent of upsetting, like, you know, the number one seed team. Think about it for a second. Like, it's Russia versus United States, 1980 Olympic hockey game, right? U.S. ends up winning in one of the greatest hockey games ever. But let's just pretend for a second that USA was like, ugh. So USA plants a bunch of drugs in, performance-enhancing drugs in the Russian locker room, and all of a sudden, Russia comes under this cloud of suspicion that they're cheating, right? That's one way to rig the tournament, so you eliminate the, you know, a competitor in a way that, you know, looks like you weren't involved, right? So that could be what's happening here. But there are anti-cheat systems inside of these platforms, Fortnite, like the bigger ones, Fortnite, Apex Legends, etc., because 99% of people are not cheating. And if 1% is cheating, it's an absolute awful experience for everyone else. Go listen to the Darknet Diaries Xbox episode 1 and 2 if you are interested in learning more about. It's only a small segment of the podcast, but they do go into it. I remember back in the day playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. It was absolutely ridiculous. It's actually the reason I quit playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, because it's like people could jump like super high, shoot through walls, everything like that. This guy puts his hands up and says, "I'm cheating." Everybody on stream can see that he's using cheats, which immediately would, you know, disqualify him. The anti-cheat system, you gotta think, there's a lot of politics going on here. This guy right here in a tournament, knowing that he's streaming live, would absolutely not turn on cheats. Now, if he's using cheats normally to rank up or whatever, that's fine. But like, dude, at this level of competition, why would you be training with cheats on? Like, you're not doing yourself a service, because you're going to be a total train wreck when it comes to the go time. So I kind of believe the guy when he says he wasn't cheating, but you got to think of the politics here. This anti-cheat system, they make their money, right? Straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie.
On confirming that cheats cannot be done. So if someone's able to do it, that means someone's able to bypass it, which means there's a question about that particular technology being effective. It looks like, ooh, okay. So really quickly, I haven't heard this one yet, but I do love Darknet Diaries. Jesse Johnson dropping a Darknet Diary episode in chat. I just dropped it in chat ourselves around mod shipping for video game systems. So I guarantee you, with a competition like $5 million and postponing a tournament, this will absolutely be investigated. We'll see what happens. I call it shenanigans.
Bank loses $40 million after, quote, systems glitch. A costly glitch. According to the BBC, Ethiopia's biggest commercial bank lost more than $40 million after customers realized they could withdraw more cash than they had in their accounts. The Central Bank of Ethiopia, serving more than 38 million people, stated that the glitch occurred during, quote, maintenance and inspection activities, end quote, ruling out a cyber attack. The bank is urging individuals who withdrew extra funds to return them, promising that they will not face criminal charges. There has been no update on whether anyone has taken the bank up on that offer.
Wow. Okay. So, hey, Worldwide Wednesday, we did see Ethiopia in chat. I don't remember who it was, but if you are in chat from Ethiopia and you have a comment on this particular story, considering it's in your hometown, drop it in chat. We'd love to see what y'all are thinking about. Pastor of Muppets is in here. So, guys, basically, you could just go to the bank and take out like whatever you want. Somebody is going to get their hand, like, to say hand slapped is probably incorrect. Guys, when you think about money systems, like, there has to be high integrity, okay? And when you, formally study databases, there's things in software, there's things called semaphores, okay? I'm not going to get wicked nerdy here, but there's things called semaphores and semaphore locks. And the entire idea behind it is that you use a semaphore lock to hold a resource to make sure that it doesn't change while you're doing something else in a system that, you know, that value needs to maintain its integrity, and then you release the lock. Okay, this is sometimes you can have a condition where there's two locks that are waiting for the other lock to unlock before it'll unlock, and then you get like basically a freeze condition. This is sometimes why systems will lock up if you write crappy code. But one of the like token textbook examples is an ATM, right? So if I have $100 in my bank account and I go to the ATM and I take out $20, but at the exact same time, Mrs. Osher goes to another ATM across town and logs in and takes $30 out. Well, if we take it out at the same time, does the bank account not realize that we took out 50 and it's like, oh, like right now we're taking out 30. So you could steal money, right? Obviously a lock would be required to hold the bank account while it made the deduction and then update and then allow the second transaction to go. That's basically the textbook example. I have no freaking idea how this particular glitch, this isn't a glitch. This is crappy software. Would allow this. This is like such a computer science freshman year case that you would study. Shout out to whoever figured out. Like, I don't know if someone fat fingered and tried to take out $10 and took out $100 when their bank account only had, you know, 30 bucks in, and they're like, oh, geez, look at this. But word spread obviously like wildfire, because you were basically just jackpotting ATMs. I don't know how there was a glitch. They said during a maintenance window. It really doesn't make any sense. Like for me, like when in what situation warrants pulling off the ability to withdraw more than what's in your account? It doesn't make any sense. Good job that the bank caught it. I'm sure they were seeing like massive. Basically, I bet you ATMs were getting jackpotted. Jackpotting an ATM basically means taking all the money out of it. There's a lot of. You don't see it anymore, but back in like the 2015, 2014, time frame. You can Google it. There were like lots of like Black Hat DEFCON talks of jackpotting ATMs where you like you do something and then all of a sudden it starts spitting money out. It was very, very sexy and very, very splashy in the media. So I don't know how they did this. They said that people need to return the money or face charges. Good luck with that. Like, that sounds like a veiled threat. But I will tell you, at least in the United States, if you accidentally take out more money than you have, the bank knows it and they will come after you. So, I'm hearing right now there's actually a Try Hack Me room directly related to this. I don't know what kind of room, but that sounds cool. Worth checking out. All right, Team SC. So Once Upon a Time says, can you inspect the logs and see if people took out more than they have? Yeah, absolutely. They definitely have to have, in financial systems, it's imperative to have audit logs. So they will have the information. I mean, I don't know if you could argue like, oh, someone stole my card and jackpotted the ATM. I don't know.
LockBit reemerges with vengeance. Despite a recent setback, thanks to the FBI.
Oh my God, really quickly, Shuttle Crab. It didn't make sense, but it did make dollars. That's pretty good.
The LockBit ransomware gang has made a comeback, claiming to have successfully stolen data from Kernetics Pharmaceuticals. This company, which focuses on developing therapies for endocrine diseases, told Recorded Future that suspicious activity was detected on an employee's account. However, they assured that the incident did not disrupt daily operations and was quickly contained. Over the weekend, LockBit's leak site listed Kernetics demanding a $4 million ransom be paid by March 23rd. However, it remains unclear whether the company intends to negotiate with the ransomware group. Meanwhile, remember when I said LockBit is back with vengeance? Despite the FBI seizure of the group's hacking tools, accounts, and source code, the group's alleged leader, LockBit Sup, stated in a recent podcast, quote, my only goal in life is to attack 1 million companies. Once I reach 1 million, I will retire forever, end quote. Needless to say, we will likely be reporting on stories like this for a while.
All right. Seems kind of trivial to say attack 1 million companies. To me, that sounds like it's more about the stats than it is about the money. LockBit Sup probably has more than enough money now to do whatever it is. So they're like just basically driving for career milestones and goals. LockBit Sup is back, quote unquote. Obviously, not obviously, but law enforcement took down LockBit's infrastructure. Again, if you don't take out the heads, multiple heads of these criminal operations, they will resurface. What I would say is they did rip down the source code, the infrastructure, the C2s, all that stuff. And they're probably continuing to do further investigation around affiliates and identifying people. So LockBit is, you know, quote unquote back, but definitely a much lower level of efficacy and spread than they were prior. I would expect this to continue to go up. This particular ransomware attack, I'm sure LockBit's up. Who's the leader of LockBit ransomware, definitely wanted to get another notch in the belt quickly after this takedown. This particular one, yes, they won $4 million, and yes, it sucks for this Kryonetics pharmaceutical company, but also this is like a PR win for LockBit Sup, demonstrating to both law enforcement and, more importantly, I would argue, the affiliate market for ransomware, that LockBit is resilient and has a business continuity plan effectively to continue operating. So based on this story, I would argue that you'd see LockBit Sup come up a little bit more, like more attacks in the coming future. Interesting that this guy did a podcast lock pits up. I mean, I'm actually going to listen to that podcast probably later today after my 11. You know, it's funny, like you think you'd want to keep a low profile, but no, it's okay. I'm going to do audio podcasts and stuff like that. So stay tuned. Standard practice, guys. Ransomware is a blight on our society. Do protections, data governance, end user awareness, email security gateway, multi-factor authentication, tabletop exercises. Like, I hate to sound like a broken record, but like this is literally the way that you manage the risk of ransomware. Okay, let's go.
Acid pour malware hits Linux network devices. Sentinel Labs researcher Tom Hengel discovered this new data wiper malware being uploaded from Ukraine, seen as a potential variant of Acid Rain malware. This makes the relationship between the two somewhat confusing, as the Acid Rain antecedent was previously used to attack targets in Ukraine, including the satellite provider Viasat. Acid poured target-specific directories in embedded Linux systems, specifically targeting network appliances like routers and NAS devices. By targeting more common x86 devices, Acid Pour could have a much wider impact than Acid Rain, which targeted the more niche MIPS architecture.
All right, a couple things here. This is a wiper virus targeting basically lightweight Unix variants. If you guys don't know, IoT devices, so your Wyze webcams, all your webcams, doorbells, you know, smart thermometers, like all your like little lightweight IoT devices, temperature gauges, smart refrigerators, they're all running, not all of them, but most of them are running lightweight Linux operating systems that have something called BusyBox, which is like a subset of critical kind of Linux commands like ls, cd, dir, you know, ifconfig, these type of things, right? And it's fine because you got to remember the IoT devices don't have a huge hard drive, and they want to be lightweight, they want to be easy to produce, etc. There's no reason to blow them up with like a full Kali Linux install or like a Windows operating system. That'd be ridiculous, especially with licensing. So they run these lightweight Unix things, and everybody knows that it's like common knowledge, right? So somebody has written data wiper malware called Acid Pour. Data wiper is destructive malware that basically just bricks your device, right? It deletes, overwrites critical system files and renders the device useless. So someone like NotPetya is a famous example of a wiper virus deployed by Russia on Ukraine. It got out into the wild and screwed up a bunch of businesses. Mondelez, Merck, to name a few. Shamoon took down Saudi Aramco back in like, I don't know, like 2011, I think, or you'll have to fact check me on that. I'm tired, but Shamoon was a really famous wiper virus. Anyways, TLDR, wiper viruses are no joke. They're intentionally destructive. And it looks like Russia is deploying these on, did they say Russia? Yeah. So it doesn't say Russia, but it says Ukraine's getting hit. I mean, obviously you can kind of like not safely attribute it, but you can point to it and say, all right, this seems like a military attack. And what it's mostly attacking is routers and networking systems that, you know, are using whatever version of Linux that this is targeting. Essentially, like, here's the TLDR, okay? Period, full stop. The impact here is that there is a wiper malware that is knocking out networking infrastructure to disrupt internet communications and network communications. That's all it is, okay? Destructive malware. They go into some detail here. You can see this is clearly from IDA Pro. You know, here's the where the erasing happens, etc. So here... The two things that you should know about with this particular one, if you want to get into details that explains how it works, how do you protect from it? That's really the question that many of us would want to be asking. It has to get on the box and detonate. So that's the first thing. Most of these IoT devices are headless. Like you're not like, it's not your daily driver. So I would almost think that if the device, okay, so here, this is my like from the hip, okay? If this device is internet facing and has poor credentials, like default credentials or whatever, someone can log right in. That's probably going to get compromised. If it has a technical exploit and it's internet facing, it could get compromised and then run this. If it is not internet facing, they're going to have to compromise an endpoint in the environment and then pivot to that networking equipment. Quite possible, but now there's an extra dimension of attack. You have to chain it to get up in there. So EDR solutions. Again, I didn't research this story, so I don't know if the asset poor is taking advantage of some vulnerability on these devices to be able to get and execute code on them, or if it's another way it could be is like basically a piece of malware that's like a Trojan that if you can get access to the box, it overwrites a file on the file system. So when the file is called, it executes the malicious version. Some people think it's a distraction from a larger attack. I don't know, maybe, but it seems pretty devastating to screw up someone's networking infrastructure. I guess if you were going to attack somebody, disrupting their networking and communication capability first is a pretty good move. We saw that with when Russia invaded Ukraine initially back in 22. They literally did a denial of service attack on the internet for Ukraine right before putting boots on the ground. I'm just looking really quickly to see if there's information on how it actually gets onto the box. I don't know. This one is worth, like, there's no information here. The NSA director, Rob Joyce, is actually providing some information. I would look into this one. Here's my final thoughts on this one. Technically, you know, it's going to suck and it could do things. This is a kind of malware that has potential to like get out of control, right? So like when you write malware from a military capability, you're targeting your adversary, but guess what? The internet, we all use the same internet. The internet's a completely hostile place. Russia attacking Ukraine, that's a cyber battle, but also me buying yoga mats on Amazon, it's the same internet. We've seen wipers and, you know, things like Stuxnet and NotPetya break out of the scope of what it was intended for and actually hurt victims in kind of a collateral damage crossfire type situation. This one has that potential, especially because Linux x86 networking devices are all over the place. So be careful. I would keep an eye on this one.
And now word from our sponsor, Vanta. From dozens of spreadsheets and screenshots to fragmented tools and manual security reviews, managing the requirements for modern compliance and security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta is the leading trust management platform that helps you centralize your efforts to establish trust and enable growth across your organization. Over 6,000 companies partner with Vanta to automate compliance, strengthen security posture, streamline security reviews, and reduce third-party risk. To learn more, go to vanta.com/CISO and watch their 3-minute product demo. That's vanta.com/CISO.
Thank you, Lauren. All right, guys, I know we're a couple minutes over. I appreciate y'all. Love this community. You guys stuck with me on the mobile studio Monday and Tuesday. I got to tell you, I got in last night. I put my head on my pillow at like 1 a.m. last night. Got up at 6, I think. I don't know. I've been doing like 4-hour sleeps, so I'm not 100% right now, and you guys have been phenomenal, so thank you for being you. You guys are awesome. hey, if you're getting value from the stream, educational value, entertainment value, do me a favor and hit that like button on chat on YouTube and basically pay it forward. I don't care about the vanity metrics of if we get over 400 likes, I'll jump in an ice bath. Like, just hit the like button and it helps other people find the channel. That's as simple as that. Shout out to the stream sponsors, Barricade, Cyber, and Panopsa. I also want to say shout out and love to Anti-Siphon Training. Anti-Siphon Training is disrupting the traditional cybersecurity training industry by providing cutting-edge, practical, and affordable cybersecurity education to anyone, regardless of financial position. They offer their students the opportunity to learn skills, practice what is taught, and engage with the community in a fun and inclusive way. I love Anti-Siphon Training. Really, like, I'm such a fan. Go to antisiphontraining.com. Go to antisiphontraining.com and check out their offerings. Go look at, if you click on training, and if you're watching on stream, click on training, go to pay what you can training. These are all the trainings you can do for $0 if you want. There's a lot of great training here. And then they have, like, you know, paid training too. That's really, really affordable. That's equally awesome. Many of you, you're taking the Getting Started with Security with Black Hills and MITRE ATT&CK with John Strand right now, taking advantage of that free opportunity. Wicked good. Also, quick shout out, just because I saw it right here. If you are a SecOps person and you want to get trained by two Jedi masters, Eric Capuano and Whitney Champion right here, Threat Hunting with Velociraptor. They are, they're with Lima Charlie right now. Shout out, I'm wearing a Lima Charlie sweatshirt right now, coincidentally. These two are amazing people, amazing professionals, and they know what the hell they're doing. Believe that. So check that out if you're interested in getting trained up by, like, experts. Guys, the Simply Cyber Community Challenge is where it's at. Bram SLI1, a.k.a. my friend Brian Ramirez, passing the baton to Monica Nunez. Dude, Simply Cyber Community, you guys are straight crushing it. Guys, Monica Nunez is going to drop... Monica Nunez is going to drop that that post today, but go on LinkedIn. If you want to blow up your professional network, go on LinkedIn and search for the hashtag Simply Cyber Community Challenge. You can see it there at the bottom. Search for that hashtag and connect with Monica, connect with Brian, comment on their posts, get going. Believe me, you will blow up your professional network because other people are going to connect with you in the comments and it's going to go gangbusters from there. Let's do the la-la-la-las and get back into the news. Thank you all so very much. I'm going to take a slug of coffee while these la-la-las load. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Thank you. Let's go.
Government agencies targeted by Chinese-linked APT groups. An advanced persistent threat, or APT group, possibly linked to the Chinese government and identified as Earth Krehang, has compromised 48 government agencies worldwide, with an additional 49 entities targeted, Trend Micro reports. This group is thought to be connected to Earth Luska, a cyber penetration team with the Chinese company iSoon, which itself has ties to the Chinese government. According to the report, Earth Krehang has targeted approximately 100 entities in 35 countries, spanning sectors such as government, finance, healthcare, and manufacturing. The group specializes in exploiting government infrastructure to disseminate malware, conduct proxy traffic, and initiate spear phishing attacks against other governmental institutions. At this point, Trend Micro's only recommendations are to educate employees on how to avoid social engineering attacks.
Well, okay. Yeah, that's one control to help thwart this. But, dude, this is a highly sophisticated threat actor operating with nation-state backing. Now, granted, government and municipalities' IT infrastructure is typically outdated, not properly maintained, doesn't have the resources to keep it going. So I'm not saying this is like Hugh Jackman in the movie Swordfish, but this, you know, make employees aware of social engineering attacks. Like, okay, like that's definitely part of it, but not exclusively. So, you know, Chinese company linked to the Chinese government. That's like saying, you know, ice cream linked to a waffle cone. Like, if you're a Chinese company, like the Chinese government is up in your business, like period, full stop. This is a penetration team. They have skills with a Z at the end, skills on executing offensive security operations. That's the difference. Intent is always the thing. Mike Saunders from Red Siege is a red team pen tester extraordinaire. If all of a sudden he like broke and became a threat actor, he would just apply all the same skills he always had. He would just be doing it with different intent. So that's all this is. This group right here, this kind of feels like, here's the thing. I feel conflicted. One, because this is totally on brand for the Chinese government, right? So it's like, okay, obviously they do espionage all the time. But at the same time, this kind of feels quasi-bombshell because this is a massive discovery, right? Hacked at least 70 orgs, 23 countries, 48 governments. I mean, this is a pretty robust campaign, if you want to call it a campaign, to uncover. You know, I would, if you work for a government, okay, whether you're in Ethiopia, Togo, Brazil, United States, wherever, if you work for some government entity, you really should be checking this out. Typically, China's motivation or modus operandi is twofold. One, it's espionage to basically enrich and better China as a country, right? So like, China doesn't really have a problem. And then I'm like paraphrasing this from the book Battlefield Cyber, if you've read it. But basically, if you are committing some type of like offensive security operation, but the benefit goes to the Chinese company, right? So like I hack like mobile, Exxon Mobil, and I steal some type of like green energy technology, but I give it to the Chinese government, like that's like approved. Like it's almost like, it's almost like a bug bounty program, but instead of like responsible disclosure, it's like disclosing it, your findings to the government, but not your findings of like where the bugs are. It's like disclosing like the goods, the jewels that you uncovered. So this is totally on brand. As a defender for any of these organizations, you absolutely should be mindful, robust information security, data governance. You know, it's all really, whether it's ransomware or espionage, it's really a lot of the same cyber hygiene controls that you need in order to reduce risk. Now, if you have a highly sophisticated, motivated threat actor, the basic cyber hygienes are not going to slow them down, right? They said spear phishing emails. So they just need to get in there. Oh my God. For some reason, we're seeing, yeah. So it says the threat actor would also build VPNs on compromised public-facing servers to access the victim's network and harvest email creds using brute force. Really quickly, and I just like a fact check on this. You see this statement right here? I don't like this statement. When I read it a minute ago, it bothered me, and it's still like an earworm bugging me, so I'm gonna pontificate on this and flip out for a hot second. The threat actor would also build VPNs on public-facing servers to access the victim's network and harvest email creds using brute force attacks. Like, this doesn't make sense to me, and I'm going to explain why. And hey, chat, blow me up if I'm wrong. Building a VPN on a public-facing server, I guess the way they're saying it here is so you could have a persistence mechanism so you could then penetrate deeper into the environment and, you know, harvest creds on boxes, like drop creds, Mimikatz or whatever, and then use those credentials to brute force attack other resources in the infrastructure. Bro, no one is, what are you taught? Like, no one, as far as I know, it makes, why would you establish and build out a VPN like service or software on a public facing server? Like, if you're trying to lay low and like live off the land or whatever, deploying a VPN, that doesn't make any sense to me. That's like very overt, right? Now, establishing a persistence mechanism on a compromised server that allows you to pivot in and come and go as you please, and then attack from there as a foothold in the organization. That's what I'm down with. But Threat Actor Academies, I guess building the VPN is the part that bothers me. It doesn't make, to me, I don't know. Yeah, Zmif, if they installed a VPN solution on a public-facing server and no one noticed it, that would be kind of bananas, right? You're seeing like, I don't know. Maybe I give IT infrastructure too much credit, but it just seems, I don't know. I see DJ B-Sex in chat. People talking about standing up an SSH server. I know it's not that hard to install software. It just seems crazy that you see like new software installed and new network connections across ports that are not typically used, right? Glory Nation says 443 and 445. So ports 443 is HTTPS and 445. Is that a SMB? But those ports are typically open. So maybe I'm not doing this justice. Right, exactly. So I'm seeing in mod chat, why do you need a VPN server? What do you like? Why are you encrypting it? Why do you need a VPN? So to me, it's like, it doesn't make sense. Like, I guess I hate to be nitpicky, but I always like to go a little deeper, provide, like, anyone can read these stories outside of the Simply Cyber Daily Cyber Threat Briefing. I like to provide a little bit of more information or a different perspective or a lesson learned or whatever. I don't want to say offense, but this doesn't make sense to me. I question it, okay?
Phishing attacks get an upgrade. Digital document publishing platforms like Flipsnack, Mark, Relay2, and Simple Booklet are increasingly exploited by threat actors to carry out phishing scams, steal login credentials, and hijack session tokens. Unlike previous strategies that use services such as Google Drive, this new tactic involves using DDP sites to bypass email security through interactive flipbooks. The attackers capitalize on free accounts and the temporary nature of hosted content, making it easier for these threat actors to avoid detection and mitigation efforts.
All right. So let me just read this, because this is a new technique in the threat actor workflows. So give me a second. It's my day to do jawjacking, so I can go a few minutes over. I don't get it, though. What's more? All right. So, all right. So here's the deal. All right. This is a good one to educate your end users on. Basically, these flipbook websites allow you to host a PDF in a web browser. That's what's going on here. And they list out a couple popular ones I've never heard of: Flipsnack, Isu, Mark, Publu, Relay2, Simple Booklet, whatever. It's a way to very easily and very conveniently make documentation available in a accessible way, right? All you need is a web browser. Welcome to Web 3.0, okay? So having said all that, Lupe Peterman, I'll answer that question in a second. So here's what you need to know. Threat actors, for a while, they were sending documents as attachments, right? Hey, Carl. Carl is our token avatar end user. Carl! Hey, Carl. Look in this email. Go click on something. All right. So we started doing smart links and defanging and all that other stuff. Email security gateways got good. So then we started attaching PDFs with directions. Like, here's your Best Buy receipt. Here, you're about to get your account shut down. Go here. Well, we started stopping that. Then it was like, okay, let's host these files on OneDrive, Google Drive, popular file storage sites, because email security gateways will allow those through, and end users will fall for it because they're used to seeing Google Drive and OneDrive. Well, we've gotten smart and savvy to those things now. So here's the evolution of it. And by the way, this is a classic token example of how threat actors evolve as defenders pivot to reduce and mitigate the impact of their current attack vectors, right? Like, when I talk about the ever living game of cat and mouse between threat actor and defender, this is like a perfect example. Like, if you want to educate people coming up in cybersecurity, or if you find yourself educating end users or IT staff on why constant vigilance is required for information security, and why, you know, we have to be on the wall, right? Game of Thrones, like, constantly vigilant up in the north. This is an example. All right. So at the end of the day, educate your end users that these stupid flipbook things, these PDFs in the browser, are being weaponized. And, you know, don't, like, I mean, these kind of look sus. You can see the examples here. Basically, you're going to click on a URL. It's going to take you to a fake landing page where they harvest your credentials. That's the workflow. And once they get your creds, they're going to turn around and log into your stuff. And if you don't have multi-factor, you're owned. Okay? So from a protection perspective, educate your end users about these attacks. Use these screenshots if you want to demonstrate what it could look like. And just make them aware. Guys, like, no one's going to send you a flipbook for an outstanding invoice or something stupid like that. So don't do that. Also, multi-factor authentication, all the things, please. Third, educate your end users. Hold a workshop on standing up a password vault. If you're reusing passwords, it doesn't matter if you have the greatest EDR technology in the world and you have multi-factor authentication on all the things. Your business, super secure, well done. Your end user, if they're reusing passwords, they're going to get victimized because the threat actor is going to log into their bank account, their retirement account, their Facebook account, like, whatever, and your employees are going to get popped. So you can use that as an opportunity to engage your end users in a meaningful way to get them to pay attention. This could screw you personally. Like, I'm not judging you if you're reusing your passwords, right? But if you're reusing passwords, you personally could get impacted. By the way, I gave a talk yesterday in Phoenix, and part of the talk I mentioned about how easy getting your password is through data dumps and just obvious password reuse. And I said, listen, passwords are so easy to get. Multi-factor authentication is absolutely critical to implement. I said, literally, I know your password is winter 2024 exclamation point. All right. And like, several people nervously laughed in the audience, and I knew it was going to hit, but they're like, right? So, like, just if you want, drop those type of things in chat. It looks like, I mean, in your awareness training briefings, right? Get ready to change it to spring 2024 exclamation point or summer 2024 exclamation point. But if you do these things, the people who are using crappy passwords, you're not calling them out, because only they know their password, but you know it too. And you guys can have like a little, kind of a meta conversation without words, where you're like, I see you, Mary. I know your password's terrible. Do something about it.
CSA announces IoT device security specification. Right now, the best way to categorize the security of consumer-connected devices is, well, buyer beware. But the new IoT device security...
I'm sorry, really quick. Lupe Peterman asked a question in chat. She said, are you saying that this is regarding the this story with the VPN, the threat actors establishing a VPN after the fact? I think this is the story, and I took offense to it. She said, Are you saying that it makes no sense for them to establish a VPN because it would not be something that would allow the threat actor to go under the radar? Yeah. I mean, what? Yes, that's basically what I'm saying, Lupe. Like, here's my thing with this story. What? Like, why? What are you doing? The only thing a VPN gets you is, I guess, encrypted communication from the threat actor's machine to the VPN that they installed. But it's noisy. Like, imagine, if you will, you like fired up your laptop and there was like a new icon on the desktop. You'd be like, what the hell is, sorry, Kenny. You'd be like, what is this? If you're on a, if you have any type of like IDS solution or any type of thing like that, when you see new, especially on a server, when you see new tech installed on a server, that's kind of like, not alarming, but identifying. It's to me, a threat actor building a VPN on a compromised public-facing server is like sticking a blinking light on it and saying, look at me, something's different. I just think it's counterintuitive to this like super sophisticated espionage level threat actor that's popping 50 government organizations worldwide. Like, to me, this seems noisy. And when you're when you're doing espionage, noisy is the opposite of what you want to be. You want to be low and slow and not call attention to anyone or to yourself, excuse me.
Specification from the Connectivity Standards Alliance, or CSA, looks to change that. This sets out baseline cybersecurity standards for connected home and other IoT device makers. Going through a certification process will allow an OEM to put a new product security verified, or PSV, mark on product packaging. Over 200 CSA member companies helped develop the specification, including Smart Home Heavyweights, Amazon, Google, Arm, and Signify. Products with the PSV mark could arrive by the 2024 holiday shopping season.
All right. Okay. So two things here. One, you know, IoT devices have notoriously been, kind of soft targets, I guess, to put it plainly, right? If you have IoT devices on your network, we already just covered a story about a wiper virus on IoTs. IoTs typically can be difficult to update. They have default creds. The Mirai botnet, famously Mirai botnet, leveraged default creds to spread, and it spread quite quickly and quite successfully. So having standards for smart home devices is cool. Lauren in the story says that it could be as ready as soon as the Christmas season this year. As much as me, you, Borderline Behemoth, David Stewart, and Matt Millen, we're cyber pros. We're all about it. Yes, let's beat our chest. Get the one with the sticker that says CSA approved. But guess what? My Aunt Donna, my cousin Pat, Matt, and Brent, when they go to the store to buy an IoT device, and there's two devices, both look the same, both do smart webcam stuff. One of them's $20 and one's $30. The $30 one has the cybersecurity standard sticker and the $20 one does not. What do you think they're going to buy, right? Like, I love this, but unless you make this a standard that you can't sell it unless it meets this standard, then, you know, I don't think this is moving the needle. End users love features and functionality, and cyber is kind of assumed and not something they're willing to pay for. And if there's a discount, I'll give you a perfect example. So anyways, this is a cool idea. I don't know if this is going to result in more secure IT infrastructure. And let me just share a personal story with you, okay? When I worked in healthcare, like a million years ago, vendors, okay, the FDA is responsible for medical devices, okay? And you can patch medical devices without violating the certification of the device, right? The device has to be certified before you can use it on a person legally, okay? But upgrading the operating system needs to be recertified, okay? So it's expensive to recertify, but vendors do it. Now, this happened multiple times. you're a vendor. We'll call you Phil Stafford. Thanks, Phil. Phil Stafford's Medical Device Inc. Okay. Phil's got a warehouse, and in his warehouse, he has 500 x-ray devices. 250 of them run Windows 7, and 250 of them run Windows 11. Now, the Windows 7 one, those aren't supported anymore, and they're gross, and nobody from InfoSec likes that. But Phil Stafford's got 250 that are just rotting on the shelf, and he wants to push them because he knows that more mature organizations aren't going to buy them because they're a liability, right? So what he does is he goes to a show and he gets directly in front of the physician's face and he's like, look at this cool tool I got. And he's like, the physician is like, Phil Stafford, your medical devices are the bomb. And Phil's like, I know, thank you. He's like, how much? And he's like, well, the devices are $100,000 each. That's the pricing for the Windows 11 one. But for you, physician, I like you. I'll sell you them for 50 grand a piece. What do you say? And the physician's like, I'll take all of them. And then Phil takes all the Windows 7 ones at the discounted price because they're basically worthless and hands them to the physician, who then comes and plugs them into the network. And then I find out about it. And guess what? They didn't keep the receipts, no returns. And the physician's like, well, I blew my budget on this, so make it work. And since we're the Office of Business Enablement, not the Business of No, that's the new crap show that I have to deal with, right? So this happens all the time. So TLDR, even with this, you're going to get results of people putting cheaper, less secure things on the network because straight cash, homie. Straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie.
Hackers behind a sale of 100 million accounts arrested.
Nice.
The good guys don't always finish last when it comes to cybercrime. The Ukrainian cyber police report they've arrested three suspects who are accused of hijacking over 100 million emails and Instagram accounts worldwide. Investigators say the charged individuals use specialized software to brute force account passwords and then steal them. Not only did the cyber criminals try to sell the compromised accounts on the dark net, they also used the access to the hacked account to scam victims' contacts into sending them money. The defendants face up to 15 years in prison.
Very nice. They used advanced tools like Hydra. Who arrested them? I just want to know, is this, this looks like Ukrainian police.
Regulators! Mount up! It was a...
Very nice. Okay, so even though, you know, there's a lot of international support for Ukraine, obviously the Russian-Ukrainian conflict is terrible, but, I mean, there's still... It's not like everybody in Ukraine is righteous and doing good stuff. There's people committing crimes. Basically, I love this. Ukrainian national police basically kicked in the door and arrested these people. 100 million accounts. It sounded like they did brute forcing. So this is why password reuse, like this story by itself shows you the value of not using passwords reuse and multi-factor authentication. They clearly got data dumps. They clearly wrote a script that says, try to log into Instagram and email service providers using this username and password, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. They probably went and got some beers and tacos and then came back and had a list of all the things that successfully worked and then sold them on the dark web and also hacked into the accounts to try to solicit money from friends or connections. So a lot of work, quite the thriving enterprise coming from Threat Actor Academy, but good. I love seeing justice being delivered to threat actors. Nobody deserves to be victimized. It sucks. If you've ever been victimized, it feels incredibly violating and it sucks. So I'm just glad that threat actors have a little bit of, hearing some footsteps in the background.
By the way, don't forget.
Thank you, Lauren Verno. Let's go. All right, guys. I know some of you, it looks like about 60 of you took off. Obviously, I would imagine it's because I went over time and many of you have like 9 a.m. Eastern appointments. Guys, went a little long. I appreciate it. I'm kind of slow today. We did go around the world. Thank you all so very much. If you're here just for the news, this was episode 582 on March 20th, 2024. We'll be back tomorrow at 8 a.m. Eastern time to bring the heat for the Daily Cyber Threat Brief podcast. But if you want to hang out, we'll do about 18 minutes of jaw-jacking and good times. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. Until next time, be good to each other and stay secure. All right, hold on. That's the wrong... Like, everything's wrong today. Wrong music, wrong... Not a good... Oh my God, the chat is like over my face. What are we doing, guy? Everything is awesome. Come on now. Let me just clean this chat up for a hot second. And then I can do my ASMR bit. Hold on. All right. That's close enough. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Jaw Jack, and I am your host, Jerry Guy, coming hot off the heels of the Simply Cyber Daily Cyber Threat Brief with that nerd, Dr. Gerald Osier. Can you imagine? Can you believe how worked up he got about that VPN? My God. What's up, everybody? Hope everything is going well. If you can give me a hot minute, I'm going to keep this on. Click those three dots and show timestamps. I don't know what you're talking about, man. Timestamps? There we go. We got timestamps now. Cool. All right. So what's cracking, y'all? Hey, Kathy Chambers. Thank you, Kathy Chambers. So, guys, Kathy Chambers is in chat. Big fan of Kathy Chambers. Big fan of Kathy Chambers. Kathy Chambers will be helping carve out the jaw jacking. I owe Kathy Chambers an intro. Got to take a note here. Starting my to-do list. Got to make it my to-done list, you guys. I don't know why Eric Taylor was so hot for timestamps, but... Kathy, intro. So what's going on, guys? I've been out of the studio for a few days. The mobile studio was fun. I don't know why my chat window was wrong when I switched over to jawjacking, but whatever. Thanks, Emilio Garcia. Guys, how's everything going? I had a great trip to Phoenix. Rob Cooper, Simply Cyber community member, he and I went literally for tacos and drinks. Between my speaking engagement and getting on the plane, super smooth travel yesterday. I was super pumped. I watched Oppenheimer on the flight. Finally, I know the Oppenheimer Barbie was like the big deal last year. I just don't move that quick. Zach Morrison says he took a SEC Plus last week, but failed. Unfortunately, it was a lot harder than I thought, but we all are learning from failing. Yes, sir. Tough break, Zach Morrison, but I love your perspective and wish you the very best on your next one. Zach Morrison, want to just point out, and this is for everybody, on Thursdays, Jesse Johnson is doing the Slay Security Plus live streams. That is a really community-driven live stream around helping people kick butt on the Security Plus exam. So definitely, Zach, if you don't know about that, go check it out. And for everybody else, if you don't know about it and you're studying or considering studying the SEC Plus, definitely want to take advantage of that. Yeah, I know the chat's smaller. Here, I can... Hold on one second. I don't know why... Here, let me do this. I'm going to have to cut it off. That's the thing. All right, here we go. Doink, doink, doink. Ready? Here we go. All right, how's that look? Is that better? Let me know if that looks better, everyone. All right. Hold on. I saw some questions coming into chat now. Space Taco says, Jerry Guy, how was your speaking adventure? How'd it go? It went really good, guys. So a couple things. One, I was in Phoenix speaking at a health insurance forum summit type conference. Met some great people, decent food. And I actually attended an AI and healthcare talk. John Hammond dropped a video on Apex Legends hack. That'll be good. I'll definitely watch that. An AI and healthcare talk. Let me just share with you one of the really wild observations that came out of this. So check this out. Imagine, if you will, a physician who has a piece of technology that will scan a patient's insides, and the medical device manufacturer says that there's AI in it, and they assert that it is diagnostic, meaning that the AI can diagnose the patient. Well, it's looking for, let's say, cancer, okay, or whatever. And the AI says, yes, this patient has cancer, and the physician is just deferring to the AI and saying, I agree with the AI, okay? What are your thoughts on that? Well, obviously, you might say, wait a minute. So if it says there's cancer, or let's say it says there's no cancer, and the physician just blanket approves, like, is the physician's on like autopilot approving it because AI says it, but then it turns out that it was wrong, right? The patient actually does have a medical condition. It is not caught. It worsens. Is there medical malpractice there? And who is responsible? Is the physician for being on autopilot, or is the AI for getting it wrong? Okay, now that seems like a pretty straightforward conversation. However, what if the physician is paying attention and says, no, there, like the AI says, yes, there is in fact a problem here. And the physician is doing their job and they say, no, there's no problem here. Now go forward, and there really is a problem. Is the physician liable for malpractice because they didn't catch it? And the argument in court would be, well, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the AI saw it, the technology saw it, and despite that, the physician still declined, right? Or the physician agrees with the AI and the AI was wrong. So now the AI's wrong and the physician's wrong. So the physician had a professional requirement to be that last line of defense. Basically, what it boils down to is with AI technologies, there's these unexpected consequences of how implementation is going to be perceived in healthcare, because the physician is screwed if they disagree with it and it was right, and they're screwed if they agree with it and it's wrong. Very, very interesting conversations. All right. So John Hammond dropped this video 10 minutes ago. I'll drop it in chat. John Hammond always dropping good content. I look forward to watching that myself. Joe Nathan has a question. Jerry, good morning. I'm starting in ReliaQuest's cybersecurity labs program with a possible job offer at the end. That's interesting. What are some ways that I could possibly stand out from the others? Hashtag Team SC. All right, so Joe Nathan, here is my best practices for standing out. One, don't just do the assignments. Crush the assignments. Take advantage of going deeper, right? If the assignment is like, whatever, do a Hydra brute force attack on a web server or an SSH server, do that, but also maybe try to do it with another tool. Try to do it with different techniques, right? Like go above and beyond. And then most importantly, engage the faculty, right? Like, you know, obviously if you have a question like, oh, I'm having trouble with this lab, fine. But then like say you do the Hydra lab, just to pick a silly example, and then you like download Burp Suite and you try to use Burp Suite and, you know, it goes well or you have some problems. You might say to the instructor like, oh, hey, like, you know, great lab. I did it with Hydra, Burp Suite, and XYZ. And I actually found it more difficult with X. Like, do you know why, right? like try to engage them a bit more and above and beyond the basic lab stuff, because what that's going to do is that's going to indicate to the faculty that you are an exceptional student who's looking to push yourself and be challenged. You might actually get additional input, additional feedback. Like maybe on the next lab, they're like, hey, Joe, hey, in this lab, we're going to do a phishing landing kit. We're going to be using social engineering toolkit, but I know that you like to push yourself. Go check out Go Fish. That's like another popular one. Now you'll start learning, engaging, treat the faculty like peers. And then basically you'll stand out, right? And then obviously take advantage of your other peers in your cohort. Help them out. If someone's having a problem and you can help them out. That's giving into a network, delivering value. If they have a Discord server, be active in it. I guess all I can say is like go above and beyond, because it's, you don't know who's watching, right? You don't know who's watching. You don't know who's there. And if you're just doing good, pushing yourself, contributing into a network, that's the greatest possibility to have fortuitous things happen. So go for it. All right, what else we got in chat? A lot of people talking about the AI stuff. What's up, Viper Nihil? Zap is ugly, I agree with that. I might take a nap today, guys. I might take the old 12-to-1 nap. Normally, I try to like squeeze a run in. Oh, by the way, I ran in Phoenix. Gorgeous. Or Scottsdale. So Matt Millen, to build on what I said, says to Joe Nathan, all the things he's talking about help show your passion. Yes, when hiring, I look for passion over experience. 100%. All right. What's up, Michael Jordan, passive observer? Good to see you. Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan? Yes, sir.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Welcome to the party, pal. Michael, just between me and you, was it gambling that got you banned from the NBA for a season? I'm just joking. All right. Today is a nap day. Guys, what's going on? Can I answer any questions? AMA style. I sent a post out on social media and on YouTube around some Simply Cyber community updates. Hey, if you are in the Low Country area of South Carolina and you're still on chat right now, please, please go check out the Simply Cyber community local meetups channel for the Low Country one. Me and Casually Joseph are planning a Charleston, South Carolina Simply Cyber community meetup on April 3rd. It will be at a brewery. There'll be beers and there'll be heavy hors d'oeuvres or heavy hors d'oeuvres. And it'll be good. And if it's just me and Casually Joseph, bring your laptop and we will magic the gathering. But if a lot of people come, we can have good conversations, good discourse. Gary, what's your question? Ask it again. I'll answer it. Just copy and paste it into chat. So let me know if you're there on, if you're going to be coming. The place that we're at asked for a headcount. So I'm trying to give them a rough estimate. I'm not trying to push FOMO onto Justin Gold right now, but we will be doing all the things South Carolina there. Cybertron, 5 hours is a long way to go for a beer. Ed Williams. Yeah. So it'll be April 3rd, I think, which is a Wednesday. We're going to try to aim for 6 to 8 p.m. on April 3rd in West Ashley. Carrie's question, Jerry, I hear that someone did a video for job posts with their resume. What do you think on this would be a good to include in a video? I hear someone did a video with. So Carrie, can you qualify this? So did someone like apply for a job and in addition to sending their resume, they did like a like a video introduction, kind of like a video cover letter. Is that what you are saying? If that's what you're saying, let me know and confirm that. Matt Millen. Actually, we could get Brandon Poole. See, the thing is, Brandon Poole's got a new... He's got a baby in the family, like a young one now. Like, congratulations, Brandon Poole. So I don't know if a midweek 3-hour drive is in the cards, because he would have to drive. He'd have to, like, leave at, like, 2 p.m. To get down there. And then, I mean, I'll ask him. It's on my to-do list now, Matt Millen, so we'll find out. I actually pinged John Hoyt about setting up an upstate Simply CyberCon. So Carrie says, Jerry, what do you think about using a video with resume trying to get hired? Okay, so I love this idea, Carrie. Okay, Loom, L-O-O-M, Loom Technology. Can I share this on screen? So Looms, you can get 25 Looms for free. I use the Looms. If you've gotten my cybersecurity career cheat sheet, all those are Loom videos. I love this technology. If I could invest in Loom, I would. That's how much I think this technology is great. And you can just drop a URL in. I think using a Loom video as like a cover letter is an excellent idea, Carrie, to stand out and distinguish yourself. Now, if you're going to do that, I think of it as like shooting your shot. All right, Carrie. So what I would say is maybe not have a script, but know what you're going to talk about. Be succinct. I wouldn't go north of like 30 seconds. I would introduce the video and say, like, treat it like a YouTube video, like very quickly up front, explain exactly what the person's going to get in the video and then deliver on it, right? What is it? Like, why are they going to want to watch it? You got to have crystal clear. If you've been working on your elevator speech, your elevator pitch, that would be a phenomenal way to do that. So yeah, I think that that's a cool idea, Carrie, and one that's definitely worth exploring. Oh, that's cool, Matt Millen. Matt, if you can come down too, that'd be cool. What's Loom? So, Legrat, I didn't know if I showed it. So Loom is this, if you go to like loom.com, oh my God. If you go to loom.com, you'll see it. But basically, you can like very quickly record your camera and your desktop really quickly. In fact, I think if I'm not mistaken, in the GRC Analyst Masterclass, I recommend using Loom to film your information security awareness videos. Jamie says, how long should I study for CompTIA Sec Plus? I already have a job for me as soon as I get the cert. Jamie's, if you have a job that is waiting for you with the Sec Plus, what I would do is, I mean, if it was me, Jamie's, okay? If it was me, I would buy the exam cram book and flashcards, and I would literally spend as many hours as I possibly could memorizing them and just do a brain dump, right? I wouldn't even try to, I mean, again, this is terrible advice if you put it on the surface, but like if you already have the job and this is a requirement, then you are way ahead of the game. So literally the fastest way to get a Sec Plus is to brain dump the exam. I would take a practice exam, see where you're baselined at. I would cram, memorize, which basically means you're not really learning, you're just memorizing answers. And then take another exam, see if you get a, 85, 90, and then immediately go sit for the Sec Plus exam. Congratulations. However you arranged getting a job lined up is cool. Good for you. Oh, cool. Space Taco says Loom is recommended. So I've been using Loom for years. I pay for it now. It's awesome. All right, it's 9:30. I have a 10 a.m. I owe Kathy Chambers some stuff. I have a lot of stuff. I actually have to like sit for 30 minutes in a chair and actually like clear my brain and think about like what actually I need to do. By the way, can I just end with this? It was so nice getting home last night. And my, like, seeing my wife sleeping in my own bed. Like, I feel like travel, work travel's a young person's game. It was so good. And then I woke my children up for school today and they were over the moon. I was over the moon. It was just so nice. All right, Nerman coming in with a super chat.
Just become best friends.
Yep. Thanks, Nerman. Love it, love it, love it. Dr. Osier, I'm reading Battlefield Cyber. It is an amazing book. I like the part where they talk about TikTok. Thank you for recommending the book. You're welcome. If you're interested in books that I recommend, go to simplycyber.io/books. It's a resource I forget to tell people about, but it's here. Rob Cooper's reading This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends by Nicole Pelroth. This book's sick. I'll drop a link in here. The book that Nerman is currently reading is this book right here. Battlefield Cyber. Very good book. Very interesting. Okay. There's my book. Shameless plug. Buy it. I think it's a great book. It definitely helps. But only get it if you need it. All right, what else we got? Keith Sloan wants to know how old I am. Keith, I am 43 or 44. I was born in 79. I'm 43, 44, 45. I think I turned 45 this year. So I'm 44. I swear to God, I don't know if other people like this, but at a certain point, you just stop keeping track. I have to do the math. Oh, no. Keith left his coffee on the coffee maker. Got to get that coffee. It was nice to get back in the French press, by the way. I'm 44. Confirmed by BSEC. Phil Stafford's 44. All right. Woo-hoo. Love it. Nah, Keith. I'm just young at heart. Micah Romaine, 40, 1979. Matt Millen, 44. Well, maybe we've just... Phil... Guys, maybe this is like this is a 44 party. Space Tacos, 51. Straight crushing it. Richard Clark, Fifth Domain, recommended by Gary Sergiatis. I feel like... Christina Palika also recommended Fifth Domain. This is Defending Our Country, Our Companies, and Ourselves in the Age of Digital Cyber Threats. I haven't read this one. I put it here because I'm almost positive Christina recommended it. I've read Richard Clark's books. He wrote Cyber War. I'm pretty sure the Orange Book. Not Cyber Warfare. Get out of here. I'm pretty sure he wrote Cyber War, which is an Orange Book, right? Well, this is yellow, but the original book was orange. I'm almost positive I read it. And by the way, I'm so anal that I want to prove that there's an orange book. There it is. Like, I don't want you guys to think that I'm lying. I have the orange one. All right, so that Richard Clark, you know, demonstrated... all right. For all the youngs in here, Casually Joseph, funny talking about getting out of here before the knitting needles are broken out. Nice. All right, guys, just remember that April 1st's April Fool's Day. We have a special daily cyber threat brief episode. If you were here last year, you know what it is. And if you're here for the first time this year, you're in for a real treat. We do some fun stuff on April Fool's Day. All right. Cyber Butterfly, my birthday's in November. All right, guys, I gotta go. Thank you all so very much. Genuinely love the jaw-jacking, love helping people answer questions, but also love just connecting with Simply Cyber community members on a more personal level. If you guys ever do, I know Matt Netchie's in Phoenix. I don't know if there's a Phoenix Simply Cyber Locals meetup, but if you're in the Phoenix Scottsdale area, I spent some time with Rob Cooper yesterday. Great guy, smart guy, nice guy. If you're in that Phoenix Scottsdale area, it might be worth giving him a high five. All right, guys, I'm going to get out of here. Thank you all so very much. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. Shout out to all of you. Stay tuned. By the way, just leave you with this last thing. I've got a call with Black Hills at 2 p.m. today to talk about that GRC t-shirt collab for the Spearfish store. So ask me tomorrow for details on that. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. Thanks, everybody, for working with me as we kind of grind through this re-entry Wednesday. Till next time, stay secure. If you enjoyed that content, keep the cybersecurity train going by connecting with the other Simply Cyber community resources. We have the Discord server that's lively and always keeps the conversation going. You can connect with me directly on LinkedIn. And also every single weekday morning on the Simply Cyber channel, we're doing live daily cyber threat briefings, 8 a.m. Eastern time, as well as Thursday at 4:30 p.m. We're doing live stream interviews with industry experts, and we produce videos that we push out every Wednesday morning. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. I hope you enjoyed the content, and we'll see you in the next one.